So Rebecca, I have a flu and my voice is a bit hot, but I will try. To speak as loudly and clearly as I can. We have called this meeting today. We have three items on the agenda. It's the adoption of the minutes. It's the presentation on the strategy on the upgrading of rural agriculture by the Department of Transport. And we have also invited the FIR to present or reflect again in assessing the portfolio committee and the department on the standard for rural leaders for upgrade also, as well as available technology and the accreditation process that is applied in South Africa to ensure that what is then used to build, repair, and maintain our roads is according to the South African Bureau of Standards. We have also invited African Access Holdings. Main reason for that is that I have been approached as a chairperson of the personal committee by teachers, also by service providers that are contracted by African Access to deliver this school in our country. I think that African Access through their subcontractors have got experience to share with us in terms of the impact of our road condition to the process of providing education in the country. It's narrated the school book is what is needed by both the teachers and the school children. And the only one way of getting those to the school through the road. And I don't want to preempt what they are going to say. I have engaged with them. I have also engaged with some of the subcontractors, and I've engaged with some of the teachers in the rural area. Because of the limited time, I did not invite service providers of school transport. Has also raised similar concerns about the conditions of roads and how they impact on the service that is expected of them to provide. I have also not invited bus operators, small bus operators, who are providing services in rural areas. They also have the same concerns. So, I have prepared a note so that we all from the same wavelength, and the portfolio committee engages during question time from a common perspective on what we want to achieve in this meeting. The first is the document that I have prepared to assist you to understand, and also to assist the presenters to understand what is it that we are trying to achieve. The background and the context within which the meeting of the Portfolio Committee on Transport should discuss the issue of upgrading rural gravel roads. The National Department of Transport is tasked with the responsibility of leading the process of providing transport services in South Africa for purposes of improving the social and economic conditions of all the people of South Africa. In understanding this responsibility, the Department of Transport, not of South Africa, of Transport, defines itself as the heartbeat for social and economic development. That is what the department says it stands for. When the Minister of Transport, Honorable Sbu Ntebele, was the MEC for Transport in KwaZulu-Natal, he defined transport infrastructure as the platform for development. He did that in an effort of raising community awareness on this issue. He put up a billboard on Commercial Road at the entrance of Pietermaritzburg, the capital city of KwaZulu-Natal. This billboard had a map of KwaZulu-Natal that showed the road infrastructure and the message that read as follows, which means roads are the way, blood way for development. That billboard had a huge impact on me and made me to view the service of providing a transport infrastructure as a very fundamental need for community development. You understand that I come from a community development background. But it was until I saw that board that I actually made a connection between community development and road infrastructure and transport infrastructure. What happened on that day in my mind, I emerged as a human being with no blood veins. I felt numb and was very shocked to realize that communities with no transport infrastructure are like human beings with no blood veins and therefore cannot survive socially and would not develop economically. Key issues that we need to take into consideration when we engage in this meeting today. One, it is the government service delivery priorities, which are education, health, job creation, crime and corruption reduction, rural development, and land reform. Two, the Minister of Transport announced in 2010 that access roads to schools as well as rural roads will be prioritized to complement government service delivery priorities. The Portfolio Committee on Transport sharply raised the issue of potholes as an indicator of a lack of focus on road maintenance, resulting with government expenditure on road accidents. We have had a claim on a road accident, which actually, for which the government had to pay $500,000 to one individual. At the moment, the estimated cost of fatal accidents in South Africa is $40 billion per annum. The number of people who die per annum are 14,000. That excludes people who die from fatal accidents. that excludes those who become crippled. It also excludes the loss of income by those who have businesses of transporting goods. That also excludes the number of people who die in places like Gaza, in Eastern Cape, where a village is at the bottom of the hill and the hospital is on top of the hill, and there is no road that is connecting that community to that hospital. So sick people from that community. Sick people from that community walk up the hill trying to get to the hospital, and they get tired. And in between the village and the hospital, there's a big tree. When they are tired, they sit under that tree just to relax and gain some strength. We were told during the oversight this year that that tree has been named the tree of death by the community, because many people have died under that tree. There are many other stories that we can share, like a woman who took a resolution that because the school is across the river and there is no safe form of transport that takes children to the school. And in the past, some of the children who were using a makeshift kind of a boat, so this mother resolved that she would rather go with her only child, use that boat across the school, across the river to the school, and sit at the school for the duration of learning hours of the child, and then take the makeshift boat with the child again back home. That parent wants her child to be educated. She finds herself compelled to take a child across the river for purposes of safety, because that is the only way she can protect her child from dying, in the absence of a bridge that connects the community to the school. So the issue of access roads to schools and clinics is not an issue of want. It is an issue of a fundamental need. You wouldn't want to build a road. You need to build a road. It is a need. The third issue is that the Portfolio Committee on Transport sharply raised the issue of potholes as an indicator of a lack of focus on road maintenance by the department, resulting with government spending a lot of money. The Minister of Transport responded positively and revived the establishment of a road maintenance fund, which gave birth to Pambasonke. The issue of road maintenance fund was discussed in the past, as early as when the former minister, Met Maharaj, was the Minister of Transport. However, there was no follow-up and focus on how to establish a road maintenance fund and how it would be utilized. So when the portfolio committee raised the issue of a deteriorating infrastructure with many potholes, the current minister then revisited that issue and the results of that were discovered. The chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Transport, myself, asked two questions in the National Assembly to the Minister of Transport. It was last year. The first question was the strategy of the Department of Transport for upgrading gravel roads in rural areas and how that strategy relates to the existing policy of 200 cars used as a benchmark or a determining factor for upgrading a rural gravel road. The existing policy says that for a gravel road in the rural area to be upgraded, there have to be first 200 cars that are using that road. And my question then was, how does that policy relate to unlocking the social and economic development potential of rural communities? And how does it relate to the current definition of the Department of Transport, the heartbeat for social and economic development? The second question that I asked was the impact of Pambasonke on potholes repairs. What I expected to hear in the response was the audit of roads by the department with potholes and the number of roads that had been repaired through Pambasonke, because that would then indicate to us that the problem, one, the extent and the nature of the problem is well understood by the department. When the department does an audit of the roads with potholes, it then has a clear understanding of the nature and the extent of the problem. It will then start from there to actually budget to say how much will be needed to address that problem, because the problem is well known. Then, when Pambasonke is implemented, again, a measurable indicator would be the reduction on the number of roads that have got put home. It would also be an introduction of the system which enables the department or a service provider to repair a pothole that is opening up. So for me, if we are responding correctly to that situation, one, we should have an audit. We should know the number of routes. And we should also have an indicator that shows to us that the number of roads with potholes is actually decreasing as a result of implementing this number. So, the third indicator for me would be that there would be a monitoring process instituted that monitors the surfacing of new potholes on the road. The response that I got did not reflect, and I left that like that and said to myself, I will come to this, I will revisit this issue. So this issue. Also, when Samba Sonke was presented to us, it was reflected that it would create jobs, 70,000. The response that I expected to that question was the number of jobs, even if the 70,000 had not been reached. But we should have been given, the National Assembly should have been given an answer that says, out of the 70,000 targeted jobs, how much Sonke has actually produced so many jobs. That would then enable us to see the impact of Samba Sonke on job creation. The third feature of Samba Sonke is skills development, training. The response also did not give an indication that there is a training program initiated by the department to train people or service providers who would then repair the potholes. If that training program had been initiated, we would have had accredited service providers. I like Evolvo as I drive the Evolvo. And you can't take a Volvo car to any service provider to repair it and maintain it. You can't even buy parts of a Volvo from a bush mechanic. That's how good the service is. That's why it is rare to find a Volvo parked on a roof. Because the parts, you can't get the pirate parts of a Volvo. And their system also indicates if you take a Volvo to an accredited service repair, and then on the next visit you go to another one, that information will reflect that this car was not repaired by service the accredited service provider so and so, and this is what was done in the car. That's what I like about it. And I think the Department of Transport can also develop that. During the process of engaging the department with the issue of potholes and discussing the establishment of Samba Sonke, we invited CSIR invited Alkama out of Africa, and we sought information from them as to whether they are standards in South Africa or not. And they shared information with us that they are standards. What we then discovered was that in the department there was a lack of a monitoring system to ensure that those standards are adhered to. So another feature of Samba Sonke and the government priorities is poverty reduction. The response given to my question did not also talk about how Samba Sonke relates to poverty reduction. Our service providers that are being established, people trained, recruited from poor families who depend on government social grants for their daily survival, so that we can then reduce the dependency of poor families on government social grants and also broaden the revenue base of municipalities and tax collection. So these questions remain half answered because their responses were not as specific as the portfolio committee would want them to be. Number six, the Auditor General pointed out in the audit report of 2010 and 2011 that the National Department of Transport does not have objectives that are SMART. SMART meaning that specific to the exact problem that is being addressed and how it is being addressed. Objectives are not measurable. They don't reflect the extent of the problem that is being addressed and how it would be reduced. They are also not achievable. Achievable means that when you generalize on the nature of the problem and the strategy that you want to implement, what you are doing then cannot be measured. They are not realistic. That is the Auditor General that is saying. They are not realistic and they are not time bound. The two questions above also point to that, to the observation of the Auditor General. The Portfolio Committee undertook oversight visits to three provinces in 2011. Did that in July, immediately after the adoption of the budget. We went to Northwest, KwaZulu-Natal, and Eastern Cape. In 2012, the Portfolio Committee undertook follow-up visits to KwaZulu-Natal and Eastern Cape. Let me start with the first visit. In Northwest, What we found and observed relate to bullet number three, to Roman figure number three. There is excessive use of consultants by the department, meaning that consultants are leading the process, not the department. In Northwest, we discovered that in the Department of Transport in Northwest, there were 110 consultants just for that department, not the provincial government. The Department of Transport, 110. The Auditor General has also made the same observation that the Portfolio Committee made, that the Department of Transport is over-reliant on consultants. It is not reliant on AGRIMO, South Africa. It is not reliant on CSIR. It is not reliant on the existing institutions within government. It is more reliant on consultants. Although we found that there were 110 consultants under the Department of Transport, we also went out now on site. And what we saw doesn't match the amount of money that is deployed in that province. What happened on the road that we went to inspect, assisted by Honorable Motsepe, who is from that province, serves in this committee. The third part of the road was fully covered by potholes, resulting with cars, including ourselves, not driving on the third part of the road. We had to drive on the sideways of the road. That is what we
offer. Sorry to interrupt you. It's already 10:15 and we haven't started the presentation yet. This is not actually fine.
Mm-hmm.
We're not.
That's fine. That's fine. I am giving a background that is going to assist us to engage in a more productive manner. Fine. If we need to revisit this issue, we will call a follow-up meeting. It is important to understand the nature of the problem and how we need to engage with it. What we also observed in the three provinces was that there is no uniform approach to number one. Each province does its own way, its own thing. We also observe that there are no standards followed by the department and the municipalities on road maintenance. In Harding, in Wabantu, we have pictures that we came across a road that is being repaired now. Potholes are repaired by the department, not the service provider. The Department of Transport in KwaZulu-Natal was using cement to repair an asphalt road. And we were not observing that for the first time. We had seen that in 2011, and we revisited it in 2012. We pointed that out, and we were told that it was going to be rectified. 2012, we did a revisit. On that day, we found the Department of Transport at work doing the same thing. Having not asked for assistance from CSIR and Agrimo South Africa for training purposes and also for guiding them to say what type of technology and what material should be used to repair the road. Roads to schools and clinics remain very poor, thereby impacting negatively on service delivery priorities of government. Policies of the apartheid government relating to upgrading of rural roads remain unchanged. So that is the context within which we want to engage in this discussion. If any of the presentations do not relate to this, let's have talk and not miss and not waste time and make those presentations. Let's just open the discussion and talk about this issue. We have then, we are expecting that in our meeting, the department will present to us the strategy. And then, CSIR will present to us how things should be done in terms of norms and standards. And then African Access will present to us the real program we are experiencing on the ground. I will now give you an opportunity to ask the person to start.
Other members present, very good morning. I am Prashant Mohan from the Department of Transport. Currently, I'm the Acting Chief Director of Road Infrastructure and Industry Development. I'll be doing the presentation today on behalf of the Transport Department. I'd like to extend an apology to the Acting DDG Road Transport and Mr. James Lau, who's off sick. He was actually supposed to do this presentation, so I'm doing it on his behalf. Secondly, my colleague, I think you do know her, Ms. Joey Mollard. She's the director of Road Infrastructure Planning. She's currently on maternity leave. Those are the two apologies from the Department of Transport. Chairperson, with regards to the last statement you made about our presentation, I do not have a presentation that covers all the points that you just raised, but I'll briefly talk about it, and I think as a follow-up, I will have to send this committee a report on all the issues that you raised. Let me start with the presentation, and I'll add it in. Okay. So the briefing that we got and the invitation for the strategy for upgrading of rural gravel roads. And we've heard the chairperson refer to some of the road program earlier on. I'll talk about that as we go along. Basically, the Samba Road Program was born out of capital with the establishment of the provincial road maintenance grant. And the key focus area of the increased investment in maintenance of key arterial roads proved to support the rural economy, increased focus on cost-efficient use of labor absorption methodology in road construction and maintenance, and then a very large focus on know your network, which I will speak to more in this presentation, and finally, for delivering a safe road environment. In terms of the overview of the presentation this morning, I'll speak a bit on gravel roads, give you some background and information on the South African road network data. I've got a slide on section by a report done by African Development Bank Group on gravel roads in Africa. I'll give you some history on past initiatives, specifically on access roads in South Africa. Slide on challenges facing the country. Some thoughts on what I refer to as a rural gravel road program, and then the current support and initiative by the department itself. And then we'll take some few questions and we'll have some discussion on this. Okay, in terms of gravel roads, so basically, I think we all know. Gravel roads, we refer to an unpaved road, which is called a gravel. It may be referred to as dirt road. The important thing that we need to understand is if a gravel road is well constructed and maintained, then it's an all-weather road. Gravel roads are more prevalent in the developing countries. However, many existing paved roads are getting converted to gravel roads due to a lack of proper maintenance. And this is in the developed countries. So we are seeing an increase in the number of kilometers of gravel roads worldwide. There is sufficient technical guidance, best practice manuals for maintenance and preservation of gravel roads. And an important point here is that gravel roads require more frequent maintenance than paved roads, especially after wet periods and when accommodating increased traffic. In terms of an overview of our road network, we all know that we have a national road network which is managed on behalf of the Department of Transport by National Roads Agency. Then we have on the red line there, that's the provincial road network. This is the combined network for all the 9 provinces of South Africa. And then we have the remaining road network, which belongs to the metros, the local municipalities, and district municipalities. In terms of the summary of this data, we estimate this to be 948,000 kilometers of road network. We have a breakdown here in terms of paved road network, gravel road network, and per authority, which is Fanrail, provinces, metros, and municipalities. This is the breakdown of the 746,000 kilometers. In terms of what we know about this network, we have 75% data on the paved road. We have 24% data on gravel roads. In some, we have data for only 37% of the road network. Yeah, when we talk of data, we refer to the road network condition. Yeah. In terms of putting this slide into some graphs, and then here we'll be focusing on the gravel roads. The provincial summary, on the top graph, there's the bar graph. The red indicates the amount of kilometers which is in a very poor condition. The orange is in a poor condition, the yellow is in a fair condition, the green is good, and the blue is very good. Now, this is per province. So what you can see here is a very high percentage of the road, of the gravel road network in the provinces is in a very poor and poor condition. Except Kalteng, and partly because the Kalteng is a very small kilometers of road network that is actually gravel. This is another slide which is expanding on the top slide there, just to show you the trend. Now, remember we said we do have information on some of the road network. So here we've plotted that the trend from 1998 to 2008. What you can see there is there's an increase in the number of road network that's becoming poor and very poor. And in terms of the condition of the gravel road network and the metro, we don't have data for all the metro, but out of the three metros we do have, the picture is not very bad in those three metros. Once again, it may not be a very good representative of the data. In the municipality, based on all the data that we have at municipality, we put the slide together, and then once again, we can see it's not in a very good condition. Now, earlier on, I said that I've pulled information from a report done by the African Development Bank Group, and the specific report was on the rural roads in Africa. And what this report is saying is that a lot of decades brought a lot of progress in the establishment of sound institutions to manage and maintain Africa's trunk road network, and saying that the process remains incomplete. They say, however, the good quality of roads, road freight will continue to be costly and inefficient until completion in the trucking industry is increased and barriers to trade are lifted. It also mentions that better access to roads in rural areas is critical to raising agricultural productivity. Then it says Africa's rapid growing cities grow under the mobility problem caused by paved roads and inadequate public transportation systems. Based on road safety, it says road traffic crashes are the third leading cause of death after malaria and HIV/AIDS and present a major public health concern. And in the final 3 points on the report that I've expected, it says even where feeder roads exist, the rural environment presents particular institutional challenges for road maintenance. Only half of the existing rural road network is in a good or fair condition, much lower than the 80% found in the inter-urban network. And for South Africa, based on the graphs and data I showed you, statement is true. But this is for all the countries in Africa. Then it says, one of the explanations of poor rural road quality is the lack of local resources to fund road maintenance. And the final point that I pull out of the report says, in response to the problem, some countries have channeled portions of their national road fund revenue to rural roads, and this seems to have been effectively improving the quality of those roads. In terms of rural road or access road initiatives in the past, each province has a particular brand or project name that they work under. So this slide is giving you the breakdown of per province, what the project entailed, what the brand name was, and how much was spent. And this was under the infrastructure grant to provinces, and it focuses on access roads under expanded public works program. So this is the slide for the province. In terms of the municipalities, this is where we need to pay more attention, because the bulk of our, in the earlier slide I showed you a breakdown of kilometers of the road network, the bulk of our gravel road network is with the municipalities. Some research was done previously by the South African Institute of Civil Engineers, and they published a book called Needs and Numbers in Local Government, and they cited civil engineering as the critical profession for service delivery. Some of the challenges that we face at the municipal level is that there's misallocation of capacity. And when we talk of capacity, we refer to technical skills, financial skills, and the institutional fragmentation. There's no decision-making tools. There's no data collection. There's no asset management system or maintenance management system. There's a lack of information. So there's no evidence based for decision, poor budget allocation as a result of this, there's non-effective delivery, and there's no forward planning. There's no preventive maintenance, which results in the deterioration of the road network. And when the road network deteriorates, the thing that is very prevalent is the potholes. It ultimately leads to increase in cost of maintenance and repair of the road. There's no sustainable budget, which means that as a result of this, there's a rapid decay in the road network, and there's also uncertainty of jobs in the environment. Now, in South Africa, one of the flagship gravel road upgrade projects was in Soweto. And fortunately, I have the book, one of my private collections. I've taken three slides from there. And the one thing that I must say here about the Soweto gravel road project, for this project, there were two important factors that made this project materialize. One, there was very strong political support. And secondly, there was funding for this project. And now, whilst I'm referring to these two important points, I think of one of my mentors earlier on in life. I worked under the former CEO of Metrorail, Hani Matea. And Hani Matea, he used to send me for meetings, and once I asked him, what do I have to go here for? There's nothing on rail. They are speaking on roads. And then he taught me a very important principle. He says, you go there to influence the agenda. So, but in this meeting here, based on the feedback and the briefing we got, I think that the agenda is known. I don't have to influence the agenda. I think the points are being raised. So this project here, as I said, there was political will and there was funding. So this is a picture before the project started. This is a picture after the road, the gravel road was upgraded. And in terms of what this project was all about, this project here, they say they powered 314 kilometers. It was completed in less than 3 years. Local subcontractors used 132. Total jobs created was 5,358. Labor days was 294,000. Local people trained 2,261. Percentage of project budget retained in the community was 25%. And the total project cost was 485 million. Now this is for 314 kilometers. Our gravel road network estimated at 454,000 kilometers. So this can give you an indication of the level of funding we need for the gravel road upgrade program. In terms of the challenges facing the country, some time ago, maybe 2 years ago, I was asked to do a presentation here on the Department of Transport Road Maintenance Program. And I put this very slide here up. And at that time, we didn't have the Road Maintenance Fund. We didn't have the Samba Funke Road Program. And when I put the first bullet up here, which says, although the department does not have a constitutional mandate to work on road infrastructure or the assets except national roads, that first point there, I could see that the members were not happy when I made that statement. But since that time there, we now have the road maintenance grant established. Chairperson has given us the background of how that grant was established. It's important that the grant is ring-fenced. It's earmarked for the provincial road only, and the Department of Transport is tasked with the management and administration of this grant. Another challenge facing this country is that the construction and upgrading of rural access roads is not happening fast enough with regard to service delivery expectations and requirements. In terms of a technical perspective, there is sufficient research and knowledge, including good pilot projects, and our colleagues who are co-presenting today will share some of this information with us. However, supervision and technical skills at implementation level is scarce or is lacking. However, there is capacity and experienced persons or companies who can be sourced to build and develop the necessary pool of skills that we need in this country. In spite of the limited resources and capacity within the Department of Transport itself, now I'm referring to us, National Department, one of the key requirements to provide assistance to road authorities is having adequate or appropriate decision support system or road asset management system, especially at the local and municipal level, and that is lacking. Another area of concern is that even if the systems are available, the condition monitoring, inspections, etc. are not happening at the required or recommended intervals. Here it's also visual condition assessment of roads, and this is a function of the route managers who need to be employed down there on the ground by the municipalities and provinces. And that's one of the reasons why there's no data. If the route managers are not there, no inspection, then there's no data. And then the level of funding for road infrastructure has been and is still far below the needs. The implication is that money is spread out or stretched, and it's not effectively or scientifically or economically utilized, which is creating backlogs rather than addressing backlogs. And some of the talks on what I refer to as a rural gravel road program, the first point we must understand or take note of is that roads are funded through taxation now and funded by government. What I'm trying to say here is that if you look at property development, the bulk of property development is done by private sector and not government. But when it comes to road investment, it's the government that spends 100% of the money on road investment, whether it's maintenance or construction, not the private sector. But the private sector and the citizens use the road. And so it's funded through taxation. But the means of taxation is always debatable, as we can see with the e-toll debate. But ultimately, government has to fund the road budget. Now, some of the thoughts is that we need to increase the municipal budget, so we need to ring-fence the rural road network and so that it has its own budget, so that the money is ring-fenced that way and can be spent on those networks. Another option is the absorption of more of the rural roads into the provincial road network. Another option is expanding the mandate and purposes of the provincial road maintenance grant. Remember that the provincial road maintenance grant is a ring-fence for provincial roads. And provincial roads is a very small percentage of gravel roads. The bulk of it is paved or surface roads. So an option is to expand the mandate and purposes of this grant. Or finally, is to create a new grant for rural road upgrade program. So these are just my thoughts on that rural road upgrade program. In terms of the current initiatives and support by the department, so we'll also address some of the points raised by the Honorable Chairperson. The first point was the DOT is implementing the Know Your Network concept of the Sample Tonka Road Program. Currently, the Division of Revenue Act, they special provisions made. The Roads Authority is allowed to use 500 rand per kilometer to do visual condition assessment and data condition and collection for a defined gravel road network. The Roads Authority is allowed to use 10 million for technical support staff from the provincial road maintenance grant. And if they were to tap into the source, it can solve the problem in terms of building internal capacity and reducing the dependency on consultants. So we have recognized that point, and that is why we allowed with negotiations with Treasury for the province to tap into some of the road maintenance grant funding. It's not a lot of money, it's small money, but it can have the desired impact. Secondly, in terms of the point raised earlier on about the Sambar Sonka Road Program is lacking in terms of standardization or implementation in a standard way by all the provinces. In that regard, there is technical support by the FanRail to process data and provide reports with regard to maintenance intervention requirements. So that support is being provided from the engineers who are working in Canrail. The second initiative, over and above the provincial road maintenance grant, the department is also managing and administrating the rural transport services and infrastructure grant. Now, the purpose of this grant is to assist rural district municipalities to set up rural asset management systems and collect data for the roads, which is basically visual condition assessment and traffic data. Furthermore, the DOT is supporting 21 district municipalities in implementing the road asset management system development program. There has been a RAMS Academy established in the Eastern Cape, and there are people being currently trained on how to do road condition assessment and how to process the RAMS data. So this is some of the initiatives. Now, remember that there's a famous saying in life: if you fail to plan, then you plan to fail. So, therefore, RAMS is very important. If you don't have a good road asset management system, then you will waste good money because you won't spend your money efficiently. So the DOT is providing support through the both grants in planning. Work is in progress. Now, in terms of policy formulation and implementation to fast-track the agenda for rural road development, what is needed is an overarching mechanism for better governance of the road infrastructure sector, which is applicable to all road authorities, which is basically the municipal road authorities, metro, the provincial, and the national road authorities. It's required to properly govern the road infrastructure sector and set national parameters and goals. The policy needs to respond to challenges and lack of development within the rural road infrastructure sector. Also seek to implement one of the principles, which entails that any African region or country that rehabilitates or builds new road infrastructure must ensure the road infrastructure construction will create regional connectivity and interoperability. This policy should take into account key requirements for any developmental state. And these requirements are summarized as: it needs to deal with how to improve intergovernmental cooperation and strategic partnerships. And this is basically in road maintenance and road construction. This is what we need to focus on. So the policy needs to steer government and road authorities in the direction to increase investment in maintenance of key arterial roads to support the rural economy. It needs to focus on cost-efficient labor absorption methodology for road construction and maintenance, a focused attention on deployment of local resources to support local road network asset management, improve access to schools and clinics and other public facilities, and delivering a safe road environment. Okay, now coming back to some of the points that were raised by the chairperson earlier on. In terms of point 5, where the chairperson raised, you mentioned that what is lacking is, based on your visit at the three provinces, they are not implementing in a standard uniform way. So in this regard, the support that the DOT has now provided, we have now gone one step further under Samba Sompe Road Program. We've now developed an implementation manual, which is going to be distributed to the road authorities, not just provinces, but all road authorities. And we will, we do have a national steering committee in place. We need to establish provincial steering committees on the ground, project liaison committees, so that we can improve the communication between the people on the ground and the road authorities through the project liaison committee, so that we can do better planning and joint planning. And what is important is those who are planning are not just planning from the drawing office or their computer using GIS. they now must get in touch with the people so that they claim according to the requirements at stake. So this Sampa Thongka manual is giving guidance of how to establish the committees and how these committees must function. It deals with intergovernmental arrangement issues, responsibilities of the DOT, the provincial DOT and local municipalities. Provides guidance for the development of major transport corridors, project identification, project planning, provides guidance on design, construction, monitoring and evaluation, and then post-construction ME. It provides guidance on labor, road construction programs and the target unemployed youth. Now, over and above the SST manual, the DOT has commissioned a study which is almost complete, and this study is titled The Social Economic Benefits of Road Infrastructure Projects. Now, based on this report here, what we found is that it is viable to invest more on road infrastructure because it has the impact that we're looking for in terms of government priorities, which is job creation, social development. So this report being finalized, once finalized, we will share this report, Socioeconomic Benefits of Road Infrastructure Projects. next point that you raised, Chairperson, was you mentioned that you didn't get proper feedback in terms of the impact on the SST implementation since it was implemented. We will have to give you a report outside this meeting, but we commit to providing you some feedback on that impact to date and what the future plans are. In terms of your information about roads, our shared slides, you can see that we are pushing for the road asset management system, and we are providing funding, or we made funding available through those grants to assist municipalities and provinces. We take note about the DOT needs to do more to understanding about the extent of potholes on the entire road network, to audit and then to put in proper monitoring and evaluation processes. We take note of training of pothole repair teams and accreditation of service providers. And we will start working on that one day. In terms of the DOT stress plan, we made a point it's not smart, it's a specific, measurable, achievable, realistic and time bound. I don't really have an answer on that, but I do believe that the DOT has went back to the drawing board, they've revisited and they need to retable a revised staff plan. I'm not sure in terms of when that is going to take place. A lot of people do have feedback on that one. If we don't, we will come back to you and give you feedback on that. In terms of the next presentation is going to be on a technical presentation by the CSIR. You did make a point earlier on about whether our standards are a barrier. So in terms of, you referred to that, you made a statement that gravel roads are not being upgraded because the traffic volumes are too low. I think it's important to understand, I did track down a DOT document which refers to different criteria for what they refer to as a warrant for upgrading gravel roads. And one of the graphs they make mention of 200 vehicles. It is true. It's not a policy, it is a guideline. But the guideline doesn't only mention about 200 vehicles. There's other factors that need to be taken account in making a decision about upgrading gravel roads. Some of these points are the riding quality, traffic visual evaluation, gravel thickness, maintenance and graveling, re-graveling cost, accidents, climate, material property, road user cost and budget constraints, socio-economic development issues, agricultural issues, and road access needs. And finally, what we call engineering judgment. And I do believe that in the presentation by the CSIR, they will give us more background into what we call gravel road management on a technical perspective. So on that note, Chairperson, I will end my presentation. And, thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. We will take the next presentation before we...
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, honourable members. I'm representing here today the President and CEO, Dr. Sibusiso Sibisi, and my colleague, my name is Cornelius Reuters. I'm the Executive Director for the Built Environment that includes the Transport Division within CSR and also AgriMall that you refer to, Chairperson. Dr. Fulgreen will present the aspects in terms of what you've written to the CSIR. You want us to talk about the cost, the advantages and disadvantages of graveling, of re-graveling roads, and also the durability of the re-graveled roads in South Africa. That was the brief that you've given us. And we have constructed the presentation in terms of that. And also, we will try to answer your questions, also what you said, in terms of point 7 of your document that you this morning, in terms of the uniform approach, how we should tackle that, the issue of standards for in South Africa, and then also we have addressed the issue of socioeconomic development vis-a-vis the issue of the impact of roads in South Africa, particularly at a rural perspective, and then the upgrading of these particular roads, how they have been in terms of the socioeconomic domain within a rural context. But let me also point out a couple of things, Jefferson. We have had the training on potholes in a number of provinces in terms of the guidelines and standards, and it's now also with the South African Road Standards. We have done all the training in the provinces except for the Northwest, Free State, Northern Cape, and Limpopo. So that is still an aspect that we're going to see and then how we can revisit that. But what I want to emphasize that in South Africa, and in particular this year, have gone a long way in terms of technical development and research in the aspect of rural roads, in terms of its upgrading. Also, we have gone further in terms of what we refer to as thin concrete road construction. We have also go in terms of what we call the roller compact concrete types of roads in terms of the research that are needed in terms of cost effectiveness. We've also go in terms of public transport. We have done in terms of heavy vehicle simulators. And then what we've also done is that the South African standards are now being utilized internationally. We have developed a pothole scanner, Chairperson, but it's still at the prototype research phase. You know, we're still testing that, so it will reduce the cost of, you know, it's a very simple device that can be used by municipalities to scan the potholes. What we need to do is that to really to get it at a technology level where we can save the calculation in terms of the volume, and then also how to calculate the materials, and then give a cost estimate. It's been at the moment being tested by the CSIR, and it will be one of the most advanced kind of technologies that we have developed. We have not included in terms of this presentation, but I just need to mention that for you. What we have done already, Chairperson, further, we have had engagement with the Department of Transport about the issues that you've mentioned. Also with SANRAL, we're doing a lot of research for them. And then we have engaged with Gautrans or the Gauteng Department of Transport. And then we've done a lot of work for Mpumalanga in terms of their rural roads and their access and the problems that, that we do have. We have an asset management system, particularly for the bridges in South Africa, and that is mostly for the main bridges in terms of the asset management, how to deal with those kind of assets. But if there are any other aspects that you need to, or you want to ask, or even from the members here, from a technical perspective, myself and Dr. Paul Page Green, we will try to answer you in terms of all of the questions in terms of the in terms of roads, in terms of infrastructure in South Africa. And it is one of the most important assets of infrastructure in South Africa. And it was high on the agenda of the infrastructure conference that were held the infrastructure that was held on the 19th and 20th of last month. And we at the CSR were part of the panel discussions in terms of innovation, research and development, in terms of infrastructure. And some of these technologies and discussions we have provided to the Department of Economic Development and to the Board of Public of South Africa. So at this note, Chairperson, I just want to hand over to my colleague to make the presentation, and then we prepare to answer the questions out loud. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Osler. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, everyone. Just look at the problem. I think it's really been discussed in some detail already. Just to highlight a couple of things. We've got many thousands of kilometers of unsealed roads in South Africa. The figures vary from 500,000 to 600,000, depending what's included and what's not. I'll do a few cost analyses just now, where I'll look at 500,000, we assume about 100,000 are probably of minor, lesser importance. They're mostly in rural and poor areas, which is a major barrier and important for access to the economy for the communities in these areas. The biggest problem is they don't provide all-weather possibility. And we've heard from Honourable Chair earlier saying kids have got to get to school, we've got to get to clinics and things. So this type of road is a problem. If it rains, you just don't get through. Obviously they cost key to maintain, you all know that, we'll look at some figures just now. And they still give numerous problems. I'm going to cover where we stand currently in gravel or unsealed roads. We'll look at the one of the target areas that we were asked to discuss, and that's upgrading using chemical stabilizers. And then move on to alternatives. Just a little background on unsealed road research in South Africa. Between 1982 and 1989, CSR carried out a major project sponsored by the Department of Transport in those days. And we evaluated the performance of 110 sections of road in old Transvaal in Namibia, so it's basically Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Northwest and Gauteng. And then we had some, it was a statistically designed experiment to cover different climates, different traffic, different materials. So we also had some in Namibia to get the drier side of things, which would relate to, for instance, the Northern Cape. And that was sponsored by Namibia. We developed some performance-related material specifications. One could see this was during the experiment, monitoring roughness, monitoring the quality of the road, the gravel loss. Basically, every 3 weeks, we went to every section of the road and spent half an hour on it, looking at how it was deteriorating. We stopped maintenance on those sections, and then every 3 months we went and measured the loss in gravel on that road so we could quantify the need to replace gravel. And we came out with some specifications, they're not very clear in this little figure here, but basically there's two properties, a particle size distribution there and a cohesiveness factor there. If we fall into this E area, performance is going to be good. If it's not, if it's higher than that, it's likely to be slippery. Down there, it's going to corrugate and revel. And these two areas on the sides, it's likely to erode and revel. So that's really where the materials need to be, in that E zone there. That specification was published in Technical Recommendation for Highways, came out in 1990. And it was also included in the COLTO specification. So basically, every gravel road that's constructed according to specifications that should comply with that requirement. We'll come back to that just now. In fact, what happened, for those who published in 1990, It was only really implemented in the early 2000s by an ex-colleague of mine who went into private consulting, and he persuaded the Western Cape province really to implement this and see what the results were. And we'll come back to that just now. Since then, 2008, 2009, TRS20 has been upgraded based on some of these results of the implementation and other research carried out since then. Okay, I'm sure you've all seen, just to highlight some of the problems, there are many different types of performance problems we get, and they're all related to either material properties or construction. You can select material with perfect properties, but if it's not constructed properly, it's not going to work. Similarly, you can have the best construction, but if your material property is not correct, you're going to have problems as well. This is a typical kind of problem. This is a possibility. One can see rain, water sitting in depressions. This is a bus route. After heavy rain, the buses cannot get through that route. On the other side, in the Northern Cape, you get this, thick sandy areas. Again, a possibility problem. There's drainage problems. As soon as you have drainage problems, you start getting potholes in gravel roads. Loose material. If you use the wrong materials, you start generating sand and fine material becomes loose. And this is probably one of the least safe roads. When you start getting these windrows of loose material there, if a vehicle hits that, it's likely to turn over. And all the fatal accidents I've seen on gravel roads during travelling on them, everyone has been related to this kind of problem. So it doesn't look a problem, but in terms of safety, it's a major problem. Dust, we all know the problems there. Not only from road user costs, excessive maintenance of vehicles, replacement of air filters, things like that. There's a major problem in terms of agriculture. The dust does affect the quality of crops. In this case, we were on the road and the farmer came out. This sheep lost 3 years. The teeth wear out after 3 years from eating dust on the crops. And that to him was a major problem. Obviously safety, there's a vehicle in the middle of that, you can't see it. So safety problems, erosion, slipperiness, corrugations. We know corrugations, the damage done to vehicles and badly corrugated roads is extreme. And it relates back to overall GDP, because now we've got to import extra spares to replace the parts that have been damaged on corrugated roads. Stoniness, excessive stones in roads, that's totally controllable, but we don't control it, and we end up with very rough roads. And just to remind us where we come from, you see things like this in roads, perfect, a bigger shape. Okay, so that's the background to unsealed roads. Once you've got them, we need to maintain them. And there's three main activities. First thing, the cheapest, is grader blading. Every few weeks, can be anything from 1 week up to 5 or 6 months, we need to put a grader on the road. Depending on the traffic and material properties, the climate, the environment, whether it's rain, the dry season. It's really to restore the smoothness and the shape of the road. Stay strong, we're going to get potholes because the water pond. The second most expensive operation is re-graveling. A gravel road is a gravel road. It blows away, it erodes, we lose it in dust. And typically between 6 and 10 years, if we put 150 millimeters of gravel on the road, that will go and it's got to be replaced. Otherwise we end up with a canal and then we've got other drainage problems and things. And then obviously the roadside, cleaning drains, cutting grass. But that's common to pay you for unpaved roads, so it's not included in the general maintenance cost of unpaved roads, so it's common to any road. In order to do this maintenance, we need good management. And the way to do this is with maintenance management system. And in the past, we've had some good ones. Most of them have deteriorated to the stage where there are very few functioning ones currently. As far as I know, the Western Cape is the only one that's got an up-to-date, properly functioning maintenance management system. It does require specialist input, and that's one of the problems. To actually go out, quantify the extent and the type of degree of stress takes quite a lot of experience and can be quite costly. So I'll come back to this just now, but we recently developed a very simple one for low volume roads, specifically to reduce the skills required in terms of implementing it and to actually operate it. Right, this is what I see as one of the biggest problems really, is the sustainability of unsealed roads. I mentioned just now, we put 150 millimeters of gravel on typically, and within 6 to 10 years it's gone and must be replaced. It requires large quantities of material. Now we're talking massive quantities. typically around about 1,200 cubic meters or 2,280 tons of gravel are required per kilometer in the regraveling process. And that's for a 7 to 8 meter wide road. If we gravel it once every 10 years, in this case I've taken, say, 60,000 kilometers. In other words, 10% of the road should be graveled every year if we're using that gravel every 10 years. So we should be regraveling 60,000 kilometers of road per year. If we were doing that, we would use gravel that would fill a soccer field, typical 10 by 70 meter soccer field, to 10.25 kilometers high. That's how much gravel we would need every year to just to replace what's being lost on 10% of the roads per year. If we just look at another perspective, I'm sure you all know Cullen and mine, the big hole there, four times bigger than Kimberley's big hole. We would fill that every 15 months with the gravel that we need to re-gravel our roads. So we're looking at a significant amount. And this is a problem. Our sources are running out. We've used up our good materials. We're starting to use poorer quality materials that don't last as long, so now we're re-graveling every 4 or 5 years for those materials. So it's an escalating problem. Obviously, with the poorer material, we're getting worse performance as well. We're not getting the good performance. We need to grade it more frequently to restore the riding quality. And we can't just go on digging holes like this forever and ever. It's a major sustainability problem. Let's look very briefly at the economics. And there's two sides we need to look at. Prasad mentioned this a little bit earlier. There's the road authority side, which is the upfront expenditure and the running cost, the operating cost. And basically, if we put cost against time there, we would build a road, the red line there, construct a road. Every now and again, we'd come back and spend a little bit of money grading it, and after a certain period, we'd have to re-gravel it. And the next period, you'd have to grade it and re-gravel it, and so it goes on. And this is an ongoing, continuous process. Obviously, the cumulative costs over the time need to be discounted to take into account the value of money with time and everything else. So the three processes. On top of that, there may be other costs, things like dust calculation, spot re-graveling. Suddenly, in some areas, you wear through a little bit quicker. So there's a little bit of ongoing maintenance on top of all that, and then say grass and grass cutting and drains are common to all roads, so we don't actually include them in this process. So basically the total cost is the sum of the construction plus the re-graveling plus the ongoing greater maintenance cost. Let's just look at a couple of figures now. What is the cost? To construct the gravel road these days, we're looking around about ¼ million rand a kilometre. That's from scratch. We've got an earth track or something to shape it and bring in the first layer of gravel. As you see, graveling is around about half of that cost, around about 120,000 rand a kilometre. This will depend on the remoteness of an area, the availability of gravel, the topography, how many culverts are needed, all things like that would come into that as well. But these are ballpark sort of figures. Greater maintenance, 340 rand per kilometre. But again, depends on the width. I've taken an 8 metre width, so there'll be two runs in each direction. If you've got a 9 metre width, you've got a problem, because you're going to end up with three runs in each direction because the overlap of the greater blade width. But you still need to keep the crown in the middle, so you can't have an uneven number. You're going to lose the crown. So it's a very delicate balance. Right, so if that's what it costs, what should we be spending per year? We need to optimize that. If we look at the re-graveling, and now I've looked at, assuming we've got 500,000 kilometers, and I've taken 10%, we've got to re-gravel 10% of that per year, at 120,000, we're looking at 6 billion rand a year. If we're not spending that, we're falling behind, and we're going to have to catch up sometime. If we look at the blading now, and again, I've taken here, 340 rand a kilometre, 4 metre width, 500,000 kilometres, all those roads have to be graded. And I said 10 times a year, which is less than once a month. Many of these roads have been graded once a week. Some of them we grade every 3-4 months. So 10 times a year is probably a reasonable guess. We should be spending 6.8 billion rand a year on greater maintenance. We're not spending anywhere near that. Look at the total there, 12.8 billion rand a year. I think Prasad showed some figures there of the total road expenditure. We're not even near this. So our maintenance is falling behind every year. And to catch up is going to be a massive problem. Okay, so that's where we're standing in terms of authority costs. Now let's just look at our user costs. These far outweigh the agency costs. We're looking at 12 billion rand a year there. That's peanuts compared to what the road user spends. So the road user's costs include the vehicle operating costs, time costs, and accident costs. If you look at the vehicle operating costs, it's fuel, it's tires, maintenance, depreciation. And depreciation on this type of road is much higher than on a well, smooth, well-maintained paved road. Obviously, a pothole road is a different story. But the farmer is running his car up and down this road, that car will last half the time of a car in a metropolitan area, for example. Okay, so that's his direct vehicle operating cost. Time. In a World Bank type analysis, we put time on the vehicle driver and the vehicle occupant. If you do that, it just dominates everything. Even the vehicle operating costs just disappear. If you say the person's time on the road is worth 20 or 100 or 500 rand per hour, you just lose it. So we don't even worry about that. But we should be. The other one is accidents. Obviously, there are more accidents on unsealed roads. Sometimes they're probably not as serious because the vehicles tend to be going a little slower. But the average cost of accidents tends to be more in terms of damage to the vehicles, not necessarily fatalities. Then we've got things like environmental aspects, pollution, the rain washing gravel into the river, dust landing in communities. We've spoken to communities where they don't even like hanging out their washing because they say it's dirtier when it comes in the afternoon than when it went out in the morning. Things like that, it's very difficult to quantify. How do you take that into account? But it's a major problem. There's social problems, access to facilities, dust in homes, getting children to school, children walking in the dust, getting knocked over by vehicles, all this sort of thing is related to social side of unsealed roads. And then we've mentioned the effect on the GDP of the country, the overall economy. Damage to goods being carried in the vehicles. We're carting eggs and avocado pears. A lot of that is damage. That's a direct cost to somebody and overall to the GDP. Things like importing parts, replacement parts, that's in GDP cost. Non-delivery. Vehicles delivering, let's take Woolworths for example, they've got a delivery time. You don't get it to the shop within 70 hours, it has to go back. It's not accepted. That whole truckload of goods is wiped out. So again, major cost to the economy of the country. These all need to be taken into account. So the cost to the authority is negligible compared to all of this. Right, so what are the solutions? We've got the problems, we know what they are. Okay, first solution is goods material selection. So if we use the TRS-20, and I didn't mention just now, it was upgraded in 2008-2009, incorporating a lot of new work, which I'll talk about just now, which changes the whole philosophy. Okay, so those specifications in Colter, the material specifications have not changed significantly. It's difficult to locate materials these days, particularly in terms of our skills. We go to the road authorities, the old, what we call pot markers, have gone. The youngsters come in and don't know how to go out in the bush and look for materials. They don't know what plants to look for, what animal activities tell you, think here you'll find material. That expertise is drifting away. So it's getting more and more difficult. Plus, the good materials are mostly being used, as I mentioned just now. It can take a long time. There's a lot of regulatory requirements now. To open a source of material, apparently, there's about 27 government departments that have to approve it, from health and safety and labor and environment and water affairs and you name it. Everybody's got to have a signature before you can open it. Typically, 18 months is the minimum. If you're starting a new road, want to locate a material source, it'll take you 18 months to get the regulatory side of that done. Okay, but there's not much you can do about that. Specification, say, has been implemented in the Western Cape, specifically by, say, an ex-colleague of mine, he's up on his own, he's a consultant now, he's got a big contract with Western Cape. They're allowing him to try things, experiment, play around with specifications, and play around with chemical stabilizers, which we'll come on to now. South France has implemented it. Namibia are implementing it full steam at the moment. So it has been implemented. And while this use should be made of it, I did get a phone call from a road authority the other day saying, how do we specify what material we need to procure for gravel roads? The person should know it's in the Malta specification. That's the material that you have to use. So why is Bodie need to say, how do you specify material? I don't know. There have been significant benefits using these specifications. But as I said before, you need good construction. And the combination of those two led to a change in philosophy. That is a road in the Western Cape that's been built to those specifications, constructed to the specifications, and that carries about 500 vehicles a day. It's only graded about once a month. So the cost immediately has dropped. It costs about 25% more to build it, but the return in terms of road user costs and reduced maintenance costs is enormous. So what we've seen is, again, sorry, it's a little bit small in this here, but if we, that's road roughness up to side there, or road deterioration at that time. Typically, if you construct or rehabilitate a road, it'll deteriorate with time, depending on what models you use, following one of those. What they found on these roads that have been constructed with the right materials, the right process, is if you don't put any maintenance on, after 2.5 years there, there's been hardly any deterioration. Then it suddenly starts deteriorating, and you see the last few dots start going up there. And so the philosophy now is rather, get the good material, build the road properly, leave it for 2.5 years without any maintenance, and then go and rip it and rebuild it. It's much cheaper than all this routine maintenance. Yeah. So there's a whole new change of philosophy there, coming out of these original specifications. Okay, so that's really where we stand with gravel roads now. But I think our biggest problem is sustainability. We just cannot go digging holes all the way along the side of the road, keep putting gravel on the roads, and it's blown away or washed away or worn away by traffic. So what can we do? There are a number of alternative ways of stabilizing the road, and what we call alternative stabilizers or treatments these days. In the last 20 odd years, there have been more than 50 of these products marketed in South Africa. People knocking on my door and road department stores saying, we've got this magic booty. We can turn any road into a freeway standard for a few rand a kilometer. And we've gone out. So we've researched these. We've looked at them in laboratory. We've looked at a road that's supposedly been treated with these chemicals. The research, just a couple of comments. The research has seldom been sponsored by a supplier. In fact, only once has a supplier paid for research. Some of the road authorities have done some research. Overseas agencies have funded a lot of the research. But in South Africa, there's been no research, essentially no research funded by a supplier. They want to market it. They don't want to pay money to actually get approved. They can have marginal benefits. And I put this picture in specifically. This was a 10 kilometer road. It was treated, it's not a government road, it's a private road. It was treated for 7 million rand. And within a couple of weeks, the dust was impossible. It's a cement-based product, this case. The cement dust is coming up here. What was a fairly reasonable road in terms of dustiness, but poor in terms of running quality and maintenance, became impossible with dust. Now you can see they're trying to put dust palliatives on here to try and minimize the dust. So on top of the 7 million rand for 10 kilometers, now they're putting on 100,000 rand a kilometer to try and reduce dust. And this is what I say, some can have marginal benefit. This is a product here, a cheap product, purely a dust palliative. The only job is to reduce dust. 100% effective. But it needs to be done every year at the end of the wet season, just before the dry season starts. It's water soluble, it gets leached out, but it works, and it's cheap. This is another one. So two products have been used quite widely. We've done a fair bit of research on them. So they do reduce dust, but they also improve or reduce the maintenance to some extent, probably 20 or 30%. Not a major saving. The problem is that both need periodic replenishment. Again, you can see there's dust behind this vehicle, it's treated from there, as soon as it's the section, there's no dust. So these two products are good in the context of maybe treating roads past schools or past clinics or hospitals, where you can say, right, you've got 300 or 400 meters, we can afford to go back and keep the dust down in these areas, or in a heavily densely populated the main arterial through the village, for instance. But it's not going to solve the double road problem. Right now, this invite originally went out to Agrimar. Agrimar have developed a certification process through CSL. We did a lot of the research work on this. And they've come out with a protocol how to get a certificate to say these chemical stabilizers will work. So, essentially, it checks the fundamental properties and the performance of the stabilizer or the chemical or the product or whatever you want to call it on two different materials. If it passes that in the laboratory and the supplier has got some field evidence to say it's worked, then Agrimar will look at all this and say, right, we will give you a certificate for 1 year, 3 years, or whatever, provided you don't change the composition of the product or any properties of the product and it continues to work. So, to provide a certificate after meeting these certain lab and field criteria, there's no guarantee that it will work on all materials, or in all situations, or under all traffic, or in all environments. A lot of these are very specific to certain aspects around there. So far, one product has been certified. And that product is actually a cement-based product with an additive which makes it a little bit more flexible. It's not the one I showed you just now, so don't worry about that. But we'll come back to that in a couple of comments time. So it's not a chemical stabilizer as such, not something you add into the road to try and strengthen the road totally in the long term. What the provinces came back, the engineers in the provinces, a lot of pressure is put on them because people come and say, right, we've got this product and everybody's using it. We think you should use it, or there's political pressure often to use it. What they're saying now is, you come with a certificate and we'll talk to you. If you haven't got an Agrimar certificate, we're not really interested. We haven't got time to look at 50 different products and decide what's what. Say, an ex-colleague of mine is doing some work with the Western Cape. They have 5 or 6 different products. I'll show you some of the results from previous work. They're just starting a new one together with the Western Cape province. Okay, so there's ongoing research. So there's different alternative stabilizers. We're looking at some still. We're liaising with consultants, authorities, say particularly Western Cape. There's mixed results. It depends on traffic, the climate, the topography, the drainage, all these things, the material type, all affected. The general perception in South Africa is that there's little confidence in most of these products. A lot of people have tried experiments here and there, and some have worked reasonably, most haven't worked. That's the example there. That's one of the stabilizers. It turned the road almost into concrete. That road is solid. The problem was there's too many stones left in it. So there's still a gravel road. It still wears away. And then the stones start popping up and you can't maintain it. And this, they sprayed water on it. They couldn't do a thing with it. They couldn't rip it. This is not in South Africa, it's overseas. I don't know what happened to that road eventually. That's one of our current experiments in Kruger Park. Here we're using bitumen emulsion to treat the material. They've got a major problem, again, with sustainability. They cannot use water pitting through the park anymore. So they've got to try and preserve what materials they've got in the road. And all they're trying to do is reduce gravel loss. This is now 2 years old, that's what it looks like. Unfortunately, the construction wasn't very good yet. You can see there's a patch down there that's not treated properly. And that's worn away. That's now 100 millimeters deep, that little channel. But overall, if we get the construction right, that's going to have a major impact on their road. Okay, this is an example now of some of the work done in Western Cape. That's a typical gravel road. This is only from there to there for about 6 months. That's a deterioration in roughness or riding quality up there. And you can see, these lines are all different kinds of products. Polymers, lignin sulfonates, all sorts of things. And you can see the deterioration is decreased. They're not deteriorating as quickly, but they're still deteriorating. The bottom two lines the bottom solid line is a paved road, where all they've done is shaped that road and put a surfacing on top. And the second one is they've treated the material with a stabilizer and then put surfacing on top. And you see the deterioration in riding quality over this year or two is much less. So if we look at that, we say these are chemicals which are costing us often the same price as paving the road. And that's the paved road, which is a viable option. The one at the bottom. Doesn't matter how we treat it, it's still a gravel road, it's still going to lose material. If we're going to treat it, rather conserve that material and try and keep it in. Okay, so how do we keep it in? We can conserve the material for at least 20 years if we put a surfacing on top. That road should last at least 20 years. After that, you're going to come back now with these modern recyclers and reuse that material. Add maybe a bit of lime, a bit of cement or something, put it back in the road. So we can get 40 to 50 years out of it now instead of 6 or 7. So in terms of material conservation, that's a major benefit. It can be more cost effective over the 20-year life. And we saw earlier some of the figures in terms of cost effectiveness. We need to look at it in terms of the life cycle over that 20 or 40 year period, not over one or 2 year upfront construction cost period. We've developed some software in 2004 through some beta where you can put in your traffic and your material properties and everything else, your design philosophy, and it'll work out the life cycle cost over a 20 or 30 or 40 year period. And if we do this, and we bring in things like environmental costs and social benefits, you can see for roads, the traffic, even as low as 30 or 40 vehicles a day, it can be cost effective. Depending on the availability of materials and construction costs, obviously they come down and make them more viable. So the 200 vehicles a day has always been a ballpark figure. But these days, if we go through the process and we look in more realistic terms, in terms of overall cost benefit, that can come right down to 50 or below. Okay, so we shouldn't just use that cost in stone. Let's say, this process, we've implemented a number of roads in various provinces, Limpopo, the Gundalashu. We've built well over 100 kilometers of road using the old gravel road and just shaping it and putting new surfacing on top. And that was going at 250,000 rand a kilometer compared to 2-3 million rand for conventional design. KZN have used it, Eastern Cape, we've done a couple of roads there, I'll show you a picture example just now. Gauteng have used it. Forestry industry, they, as a private enterprise, they obviously worry about where their money's going, and we've used it there, and this is an example. There was a road to a sawmill carrying 40 or 50 trucks, timber trucks in every day, and 40 or 50 trucks out with the cut wood every day. Again, it was very difficult to maintain, poor material, stony, but a very good material for a base course for a paved road. So we did an investigation, we went in there, and in this case, this was done in 1996-95. It cost about 40,000 rand a kilometre to build that road. And that road is still there today. There's a few potholes been patched, it's never been resealed, nearly 20 years later, it's still there today. And then, obviously, private industry and mines, the same process we've applied. Again, in terms of CSR, from 1989, we really got involved with the so-called low-volume steel roads, and we're still actively involved. Early in this period, 1989 to about 1994, we looked at 57 roads that we knew were old gravel roads or experimental roads that were really gravel roads that were just shaped and sealed in the Free State, in every province in those days, the four main provinces, but it would certainly cover all nine provinces today. And they all had marginal materials, thin structures, upgraded gravel roads. These were incorporated in the guidelines that Prasanth mentioned a bit earlier, came out in 1992 by the Department of Transport under the old RADAC project, but they've never been widely implemented. And the reason, if you look at the reason, I think partly they were never really disseminated properly. That's one of the reasons. But the engineers in South Africa know about that. The biggest problem, from my experience, is conservatism. The average older engineer in South Africa is very conservative. They are not prepared to take any increased risk, should I say, or perceived increased risk. And I'll come back to that just now. I've recently done a couple of designs like this, gone back to the engineer, and they said, rubbish, it'll never work. So what would have been 120,000 rand road comes out as 3 million rand per kilometre road. And for 30 vehicles a day, it doesn't make sense. Okay. So the implementation is mostly by CSL. We've done this on a number of roads. People have come to us, provinces have come to us and said, there's a road, we want to upgrade it, we want to use labour. How do we do it? And say some innovative practitioners and some of the road authorities. We're currently developing a more user-friendly guideline. It's based on that one, but looking only at the payment design, we're not looking as much on the geometric side. I think there was a problem with that other one. The geometric side wasn't really made totally appropriate to the situation. And that was the first two or three chapters. So people saw that and didn't actually move on into the more technical side. So it is a CSR project which should finish the end of this year. Limited funding for it, but we're trying to make that more user-friendly, repackage it, bring out a little bit of simple software that goes with it to make it more implementable. So currently it is fairly restricted funding. We've been doing it for 2 years. It's going to be 10 or 12 chapters. Each chapter will be self-standing, hopefully. That's in the early 90s, sampling these roads. This is a typical kind of road here. This is in the Free State. We've taken samples out, we've seen what's in the road, what the thickness is, quantified the traffic, the environment, come back and said, why is this road working when in theory it shouldn't be working, but it is. Okay, that's a typical one again in the Northwest Province. This is a road to the rubbish dump, carries all the rubbish out. At the time this photograph was taken, it was about 12 years old, and one can see the old gravel road, but the surfacing on it, perfect condition. This one we sampled in the Cape in 1993. I took this picture in 2004. Here's our sample hole still there. It's never been resealed. It was already 8 years old when we sampled it. So 2004, it was nearly 18, 19 years old. And I took this picture, December last year. It's been resealed now. After nearly 20 years, it's been resealed. But that road is still perfect. It's carried around about 3 million vehicles, but only about 30,000 equivalent trucks. It's a road to a beach resort in the Eastern Cape. So again, it's an old gravel road, they just shaped it and paved it, and they got 25, 30 years service out of it. And that, I think, at the time, came to cost about 38,000 rand a kilometre to shape it and seal it. Obviously, escalation put it up, but we're probably looking now at 150,000 to 200,000 as opposed to 3.5, 4, 5 million for a typical conventional rural road. Okay, so where do we sit? There's our gravel road. There's our typical design paved road. This is where we're sitting here. This gap between the gravel road and the sort of 250,000 rand road and the 3.5, 4 million rand road. We're trying to fill this gap here. Come in here at 400,000 or 500,000 maybe, up to a couple of million maximum. And there's no reason why we shouldn't be doing that. The system we're using, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but all we do is run down the old gravel road with a penetrometer, you pick up that weight there, you drop it, and you measure the rate of penetration of this device into the road. You can investigate 15-kilometer road in one day using this equipment. Take it back to the office, you put in the computer software, and it generates a whole lot of profiles at different depths in the pavement. And that gives you the strength. In this case, there's from 200 or 150 down to 300, 350 to 400. And we relate that. The blue line there is the carrying capacity we need for that kind of traffic on this road. And this is 300,000 standard axle traffic on the top of that. One can see, if those lines fall to the left of that, it's strong enough. If they fall to the right of it, it's not strong enough for each of those lines. In this case, had we just sealed it, that line there would have been down the end there. So that material there wouldn't have been strong enough. But for the underlying layer, it's perfect. So all we've got to do is bring in one layer and put a surfacing on top. We don't need to dig this whole road up and start from scratch to bring in four layers and add cement to this one and that one. So it's a very quick, cost-effective road. This is one road done in the Eastern Cape in 1999. This photograph was taken in 2003. Subsequently, it's had no maintenance, two potholes formed, and I believe there's not much of it left. Had it been maintained, probably still would have been there today. Okay, now we can understand the pavement structure. The surfacing on top, what do we do with that? That's quite expensive normally. So again, Sabita has recently sponsored a project, again with a colleague of mine in the Western Cape and myself. We brought out this document, the bitumen and surfacing for low volume roads and temporary deviations. Specifically, how do we select the most appropriate surfacing for a low volume road? We look at the appropriateness for the situation, and it's not always a cheap surfacing that's going to be the best. We know, in townships for instance, you've got a gravel road, you put a double chip surfacing on, it's going to last 3 or 4 years. Why? Because the community is throwing soapy water on the road, and that messes up the asphalt, and it's deteriorated. In a township, it's much more cost effective to put an asphalt pavement than it is for a double stone chip. It's going to cost you more, but it's going to last 20 years. Other ones not. And this document looks at things like that. You can't put a 19mm chip seal in a township. I know how many ladies here try to walk on a chip seal in high heels. It doesn't work. You can't do it. So you've got to have a smooth surface in it. So things like this need to be taken into consideration. And all these are considered in this document. It says, hot off the press, you'll see the date there, 10th of April this year. It's just come out. It's an upgrade of an old one that came out in the 1990s. Far more appropriate, includes new things. It's all based on life cycle costs. And a couple of typical examples now. This is what we call a sand seal. It's widely used. Kruger National Park, they got 900 kilometers of paved road. This is all they use, sand seal. Why? The material comes out of the rivers. Every year when it floods, it's replaced. So it's a renewable resource. You don't dig holes in the ground. In the river, in the dry season, you take it out, and nobody knows you've put it in the road. It's got a couple of perceived disadvantages. A lot of the time it looks like this when you reach here. You have sand lying in the road for a few weeks, but it slowly goes away, and you end up with a nice, smooth surface like that. Very cost-effective, very cheap, and very appropriate in many situations. The other one is the otter seal in Botswana. This is developed by Norwegians. Again, you use material from the side of the road. You don't have to go to a quarry and open a quarry and cut stone. You can see here, there's dusty material straight from the side of the road being put down. It's coarser than that. It looks like an asphalt, which is an important thing. Because again, we've seen communities saying, we don't want a chip seal. We want an asphalt seal. We want what the cities have got. We don't want a cheap seal. This looks like an asphalt. But it's much cheaper. It's much easier to design. It doesn't go wrong nearly as often. It's used on more than 75% of secondary roads in Botswana. And say that's more than 1,600 kilometers. It's almost all they use outside the cities in Botswana. So again, we're looking at appropriateness. Right, I said we'd look at the risk. This is a perception of a lot of engineers that you've got a much higher risk. Is there any higher risk of failure than using conventional design? In terms of DCP, or the penetrometer design, no. We use that process for rehabilitation of major highways. We go out on a major highway, M1, we'll do a DCP survey, and they'll design that road based on that DCP survey. So why can't we design a low volume road on the same principle? The risk shouldn't be any bigger as long as we understand what we're doing. So the process needs to be understood and followed properly. We need good maintenance practices and management. And this comes back again to what we said. If you don't fill potholes, don't seal cracks, your road is going to go. Whether it's this road or a highway, if you don't maintain it, you're going to have problems. Local failure is inevitable. Doesn't matter what you do. Even on the R21 from Pretoria to the airport, there's failures on that. Brand new deep radio road. There's failures already. On this type of road, we will still get localized failures. So the whole road is not going to fail. It's going to be a patch here and a patch there. You go back and you fix it. Okay, so local failure is inevitable, but they must be maintained immediately. And that's where now, in the construction, your local labor and skills can be developed. And they can do that maintenance quite easily if it's coordinated properly. This is, again, an example, old gravel road, literally shaped and sealed. It was doing fine, and then potholes started. Another one. These potholes have all maintained for a long time. Then they stopped maintaining them. Now the potholes are generating them. This is typical of a badly maintained. You can see how low volume this is. There's no lines, anything in these roads. They're very rural roads. The ultimate problem, you saw something of it flattened earlier. Don't maintain them. I was told to say this is only a joke. Please don't experience it.
I've got one on my laptop with a guy.
Yeah. Okay, are there any other risks associated with these roads? Possibly. One of them is if you've got a double road and you pave it, the cars are going to go faster. So the possibility of more accidents increases. You're also going to have sharper bends and things, so the accidents may be more severe. But we can handle them. This is a road on the Swaziland border, in Mpumalanga. Double road, shaped and paved, signboard there, 80 kilometers an hour. It says there, exceeding this limit at your own risk. Everybody who travels this sees that board, and basically if you go off that sharp bend right there, 90 degree bend, you'll be warned. And in fact on this road there have been very few accidents. But compared to the old slippery double road here in the past, everybody's much happier. Say appropriate warning signs, and necessarily you can put speed bumps or whatever you want in there. Depressions as opposed to culverts, just put a depression for the water to drain across the road and make it a part of the drainage system and also the speed reduction system. So there's a lot of ways of handling this. Our perception, talking to people on these roads, road users, taxis, the community generally prefer an appropriate low volume sealed road to an unpaved road, provided it's not potholed. Our chairman said just now, he was on roads where it's much better to drive on the gravel edges than on the road. Potholes are ghastly to drive on. They can do major damage to the road. This is, again, this is one of the Gundulashu roads. Very cheap. You can see there's a little bit of bleeding there, but compared to what was there before, this road we built in 1999, 2000 somewhere. This was taken early last year, so 11 years, 12 years on. That's still the original otter seal. They tend to bleed a little bit like this in hot weather, but compared to what was there before, that's a significant improvement. Just to come back to the management now, say this is a critical component of the process. We need to implement proper, appropriate management systems. And in fact, it's actually compulsory by law now. Local Government Municipal Finance Management Act 2003, Act Number 56. Every local authority must have an asset register. They must know what assets they got and what condition it's in. You can't do that if you haven't got a management system. So you need some kind of management system, as Prasanth said earlier. And it requires regular assessment. You can't just say, right, there's our roads, you've got 20 kilometres, we don't know what condition they are. We saw municipal, small municipal areas, only 4% of the roads in South Africa, we actually know what their condition is. The other 96%, we haven't a clue, we don't even know if that's still there. Okay. So it does facilitate systematic planning and budgeting, but I said earlier, this is a typical management system. One has to go out and look at the road and rate a whole bunch of properties here, and you need skilled, trained people to go and do that to be able to get a consistent rating. You've got to walk up and down the road, look at it and say, right, what's the quality? Are the potholes, is it severe or not severe, things like that. This one's got riding quality at the bottom. You see green is good, orange is not so good, and red is bad. Part of that management system. But these tend to be far too sophisticated for what we want. We want to know how many kilometers of road, and what, is it paved or unpaved? That's the first thing we need to know, that's half the time. And what condition? Is it good, fair, or what I said, is it acceptable, unacceptable, or totally unacceptable? Those are the three categories we need to define. We don't need fives and fours and threes and 2.5s and things like that. So, based on that premise, I went out and looked at a whole lot of local authorities. We came up with what we call SLAPMS, Small Local Authority Pavement Management System. It's a simplified PMS for small local authorities. And basically, it's just a spreadsheet and a simplified document that anybody in the morning can be trained to use. And literally, you're going to drive down the road. When you get to the end, you say, look at the document in terms of three or four criteria. You say, is it acceptable or totally acceptable, unacceptable, or totally unacceptable? Those are your three criteria. If you've driven it, particularly in your own car, you'll get that pretty close. And then we look at the drainage, we look at the riding quality, and then the defects, the dusty, the corrugated, things like that. So a very simple system, put into a spreadsheet, you can do it on an iPad or a phone in the field, you put in the data, go back, and it tells you how many Ks you've got and what condition it is. So it's a very simple system. It's just about completed. I've implemented it on our interest in one municipality, just to see how it works, and it seems to be fine. At least we know how many kilometers of road in that municipality now. Okay, where are we going from here? Right, I mentioned the access guidelines. We're doing the update of our old DOT report. That will be completed by December this year. And so it's going to be a fairly voluminous report. There's a couple of TRHs which are actually part of that document. We'll implement it where possible, initially on a pilot scale, just to persuade people that it does work, although we've done it in the past. Refine the design catalogs. We need to look at things like climate, topography. We may need to make small modifications in some areas based on local conditions. But we only do this through back analysis. We need to build a road and then see how it performs. We can't guess what's going to happen. You learn by your mistakes, as you'll see just now. Develop wider skills based CSR for continued research and implementation. This is one of our problems. Currently, most of this knowledge sits in this head. This head's getting old. This head's not going to be a CSR for a lot longer. I'm trying to mentor three or four youngsters to take over and understand this. And obviously that takes time, and we have to be out there. It costs money. So there's still lots of gaps that we're working on. Technology transfer. We presented numerous courses through Surfing Road Federation and Unsealed Road Design Maintenance Management. Since this TRH 20 was revised in 2008, we've done about 7 or 8 courses for literally hundreds of people. So the community or the engineering fraternity knows what's out there, a lot of them. But, I mean, hundreds out of the 3,500 civil engineers in South Africa, it's not a lot really. We presented one Road Federation course on low volume road design process, and that was a pilot course in March this year. It was nearly cancelled through lack of interest. Eventually, they managed to round up 18 people. And it was a 3-day course. It covered all aspects. The response was pretty good. But I think that's not a very satisfactory response, 18 people. The Road Federation do advertise widely. It goes out to all of the Institute of Engineering members, all the local authorities, all the municipalities. So I'm not sure what happening there. Implementation. I think obviously we need to publicize this basic access road guideline a lot more than the previous one was. So that was one of the problems. The publicity of that original document wasn't that good. It was right at the end of the old RADAC, or Research Development Advisory Council funding, and I think it sort of got lost in that changeover. It needs intervention from a government, national, provincial, or local to regulate its use and implementation. But without the client body saying, look, let's look at alternatives, it's not going to happen. We need to increase Agrimark certification of the chemical stabilizers, and we need to persuade the suppliers of those. So if you want to market them, you need to get your foot in the door with a certificate. Work with consultants and authorities, so we're trying that as hard as we can. Ensure proper construction control. I showed just now how important it is that you build the roads properly. Monitor them afterwards. Train contractors. This is part of that Otterfield, for instance, every training. There's a fellow from Norway who developed the process, been training them on the Gundelache project. Here's the road we built, and this is part of the training. As I said before, we will have some failures. It'll usually be localized, but I guarantee we'll have a lot more successes. And it's only we learn from the failures. We don't learn from the successes. So we need to investigate them fully and sort of back analyze them. And say, just in terms of summary, we can't seal all 500,000 kilometers of road. The finances just do not allow it. We can't even maintain them at the moment. So we need to prioritize and manage unsealed road network carefully to ensure that the optimum use is made of the limited resources we got. That's the skills as well as the funding or budget. We need to use the best materials and construction for the unsealed roads. Use alternative stabilizers where appropriate. I'm not saying don't use them. I'm sure there's certain cases where the supplier will come and say that road is perfect. I guarantee it. And some of the suppliers are giving what they call a product performance guarantee system. They say if it doesn't work, we'll come and do it again at our cost. We guarantee your gravel loss will reduce by 40%, your dust will reduce by 80%. If it doesn't, we will fix it. And that's one way to go. We need to look at upgrading to seal standard where appropriate. And if we can get a low construction cost, then we can do that. We can produce far more cost-effective rural roads if we put our minds to it. But again, we need to study each road individually. And hopefully, we won't have this going from Tara to Gabon as commonly in future. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now give the applicant answer. They indicated their presentation will only be for 10 minutes, and thereafter we will engage in discussion.
Thank you very much, Sam. And thank you very much for inviting us into this most important meeting. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of African Access, I would like to share with you some of the experiences. And the experiences will be confined to the challenges that we have based on the model of the business that we're currently running. And before I could do that, I just want to take you through some of the brief discussions that we want to take you through. The first one will take you through the company profile, which is going to be just a brief indication of what African Access do. And also linking to that is our Edge Solution subcontractor model or system, which is linking to the road infrastructure and also looking at how that rural road inaccessibility have a significant impact of this discussion. And you'll notice that in some of the points that we're going to highlight, previous speakers in various subjects have touched on to those issues, clearly indicating that those are sensitive issues that need to be addressed and dealt with. And another thing is we'll look at the impact of transport maintenance, and this is in line with the subcontractor systems that we're having and aligning it to the effect of the rural roads to the transport maintenance. Firstly, just to give you the African Access, we have various subsidiaries. However, the focus for today is going to be on our Edge Solution model, which is having the warehousing and the logistics system. Just to cut into Edge Solution, Edge Solution was formulated in 2002 just to deliver in the learner material for a revised national curriculum statement. Under Edge Solution, we then formulated what we call Edge Procurement business. The Edge Procurement business
is a complete end-to-end procurement services for learning and teaching support material systems. This provides a solution to the provincial government and also delivering all the learner-teacher support material to thousands of schools across the country. This has got an impact to about millions of learners in various schools that we have in our country. That's how important it is for the learners to receive one book on time, and our central procurement system has been perfected to be able to procure books on time and to deliver those books to schools on time. We are not in all provinces, I need to mention that. We are on, out of the 9 provinces, we currently are in 4 provinces, and that's where we find where we have actually managed to deliver the books on time. The Engine Logistics Company, which is handling all the logistical distribution of the books. We could have gone into a system of going into the big logistic companies. We opted not to go with the big logistic companies, but also to go and assist the men or the ladies in our local communities with vehicles to assist them to start up their own business. And this process here was igniting entrepreneurs in our communities and making sure that those entrepreneurs with vehicles are able to put bread on their table and have sustainable jobs as well. So it was more a job creation and assisting and ensuring that we sustain them. However, there are challenges, and one of the challenges that we're going to be talking about relates to the road infrastructure system and how that impacts onto that. These are the people that, on the basis of the delivery they do, they are paid per performance of the delivery of the vehicle. So this is quite critical for them. Now, the extensive use of the road transport to deliver on time and within budget for the provincial government is critical for the subcontractors that we are currently having. Edge Solution has appointed the services of subcontractors with their own vehicle and transport. A key objective of their job is to deliver the learner material to schools. And the delivery needs to be on time. And we deliver, for the purpose of their delivery, they need to use the road infrastructure that we currently have in our country. And we heard from speaker to speaker that there are currently challenges that are going through in our road infrastructure, particularly the unpaved roads. One of the benefits of our subcontractors, why we went the route of having the subcontractors, as I mentioned, was to create the jobs, our employment, and also alleviate poverty. We've taken note of the subcontractors that we have in our country. We created about 175 subcontractors currently with their own vehicles that they have to maintain and work within our system to be able to deliver on time. In Gauteng, we currently have about 40 subcontractors. In KwaZulu-Natal, about 65. And if we take KwaZulu-Natal specifically, and based on the reflection of the gravel roads that have been reflected, KwaZulu-Natal is among the provinces with a huge number of the gravel roads throughout. So there's also challenges in there. The same as Mpumalanga and also Limpopo. So some of the gravel road challenges that we've seen that the previous speakers have noted on are the challenges that we are also facing, and we will discuss them in more detail. The rural inaccessibility of road infrastructure in many areas are failing and does not allow for access of to deep rural schools. Our challenge is going into those schools, and that's where we have significant challenges. The only way for subcontractors to be able to reach these schools, they probably have to buy the 4x4. And if you take into consideration the amount of income previously they were earning and where they are currently, they cannot afford that. This prompts, or rather perpetuates, the problem of bringing lower entrepreneurs into the market. It prohibits them. We are blocking them into entering into this space totally. Rainy seasons, I think Dr. Flynn, you've mentioned very clearly, during the rainy seasons, the roads are even more challenging. totally unaccessible, unable to access the school. Some of the examples that we have got from the subcontractors are quite amazing. Where the subcontractor has got to leave a vehicle at distance to walk to the school to notify the school that the books are here and seek assistance from a learner to walk all the way carrying the books back to the school. Time is of essence to delivery of the books. Most of the deliveries of the books happen during the rainy season, and that's where you find that it's around October, November, and towards the end of December. Those are the rainy times. So it compounds to the problems that we currently have in terms of accessing some of the schools. We have looked into some of the various studies that were done previously, some by the CSIR and various other stakeholders in this industry in terms of the vehicle maintenance. And also, we've realized when you talk vehicle maintenance, the tires, the maintenance of the vehicles, it's a whole lot of other aspects that goes into that. The repair cost can increase significantly, but also the replacement cost of that vehicle in 2 years' time supersedes the cost of what you can sell the vehicle for after 2 years. So it compounds in terms of the problems that are created for the subcontractors and the people that we are willing to assist in this aspect. When you talk about the increases in excess of 121% for a truck on a bad road condition, that clearly indicates how significant that impact is. Not only is the question of the impact of the increase in terms of the maintenance, but we know overall there are other increases of other costs. South Africa has been compounding increases in electricity and other costs. So besides the household and the maintenance, we are also creating significant costs for the subcontractors. The logistic cost increases as well. Therefore, we can't afford a continued deterioration of our road network going forward. The arresting of this problem as soon as possible will assist not only accessibility into the health sector, but also aligned to other sectors of the economy, including education. The chairperson of the portfolio committee mentioned other sectors such as the bus infrastructure, also mentioned the taxi industry and any other industry. All these industries have the same problems that we are currently having. Now, I would also like to go back to the initial discussion on the opening of the discussion by the chairperson in terms of making mention of the fact that the road infrastructure is like a human being with no blood veins. If a human being without blood veins, there's no way you can survive. This is the current situation we find ourselves in with our subcontractors, where we have literally taken the blood veins out of their system and hoping they will survive. There will be no development if we don't improve our infrastructure and those infrastructure. This I will not go into much detail, and I think from previous speaker we have looked at from a very bad growth to better to good growth, the implication of that, a huge significant growth in excess of 500,000 kilometers of road needs attention. And it has been mentioned by other speakers, which I will not repeat, it will cost significantly. These are some of the conditions you find on some of the roads, and these are the challenges that we currently have. This needs significant attention, and as much so, the cost of replacement of the vehicle, the accident, and all that. Some of the conditions are appalling, challenging, and you do not want to see more of the road deteriorating to this expectation. I think these are some of the challenges that we have in terms of the road presentation, and some of these studies we have looked at, some of the researchers we have looked into the challenges of the road, use some of the components. And I think in closing, from African Access and the subcontractors that we have mentioned how the road conditions are important to accessibility to our schools, and we are aware of the fact that it's not excluding of other challenges in terms of the health sector and other sectors. I think in that we Thank you. Thank you for the time.
Thank you very much. And thank you for asking others coming to us this time in understanding the impact of poor road infrastructure to education. I know often members of us are interested in comments. I just want to ask a question from you now, Chairperson. Where did you get this voice choir? I was a chorister myself and a soloist in my high school, and there was a girls choir that I belonged to, and the boys can go in I agree with you, Chairperson. Chairperson, this one, the last one, I really have no question, except just saying. Just a short little story, not a long story. I'm from the Eastern Cape, and there is a project from ESCOM visiting schools, telling them about reducing electricity and what and what and what. And this project, my son-in-law, is part of it. I agree with you when you complain about this road. Take a 4x4 and go to rural schools, 2 days is enough. Take a bucky, his bucky, same thing. Go and hire from Avis a car to go to Musikisiki outside, Port St. John's, same thing outside. Now, I would ask a question I don't know from whom now. What is going to be done? This is what we experience every day we rural people. You see, when the president, not the president, the minister, our minister, Mundebele, said these roads should be a priority. He knew about it. He is from a rural area also. There is nothing that is happening in rural areas because there are no roads. Okay. Going to the last, I don't know which one now, but it's clear to you, upgrading rural roads. All what I understand, there are means of improving on the road. There are cheaper means, there are expensive means, but nothing is happening. Nothing is happening, really. You see, in another instance, the first one, presentation, he mentioned something. He said they are going to organize some committees, and these committees will communicate with the community. That's exactly the thing we don't want, because it goes up to consultants. He even said and consultants, because people are sitting in not knowing what is happening outside there, and they rely upon these communities. Not even the community, these committees. These committees will come back and say everything is smooth and nothing has been done. So why don't you go out and see these roads yourself? Because when we go there, we get the opposite of what you have been saying, which is taking us backwards now. But all what we need is good rules. If ever you know what a rural area is, you would know that it's impossible to wake up and drive to the clinic. It is impossible for school children to go to school at some time. Those are the priorities we need from you. And it is true, if these roads are going to be good, they are going to be expensive. But something must be done. Something is either an expensive road or a cheap road. But we do need roads to this area.
Maybe you have not experienced, some RAO has tried this, but it didn't work. Some RAO in the Eastern Cape tried to put a, what do you call this, side road to a main road, where they drive bicycle and they walk, side road, basically. But some RAO did just about 2 kilometers. Or 3 kilometers. And the worst part of it, why this, you mentioned it, why these roads are like this, it's because of these trucks. The N2 in the Eastern Cape, you cannot drive because of the trucks. And those are the things that are damaging our roads. If only something could be done, I don't say there should be two N2s going running parallel. But it comes out to repairing this road and they come back within, you mentioned 2 years, it's even less than 2 years. You think the road is solid, the truck drivers come in and it's wasted. And what is even worse is the accident caused by these potholes. It's better for the people who reside in that area. They know there's a pothole. I know if I'm driving home, there's a pothole there, then I try to dodge. But driving at night and driving after the rain, you don't see anything. That is how accidents are. All what we are asking for is good roads. I don't think we say, do this. We have had the options. We have given us the options. Yes, I agree to the options. That we cannot take an expensive one for us, though it is good. But what can be done? Because all what we need is a good road. Thank you, Jack.
Thank you, Honorable Kronbrook.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, I would like to thank all the presentations by the department, the FIR, and the African Access Holding Group. Chairperson, I think these are honest presentations. Let me start by the African Access Holding, that I feel sorry for them because they are unable to do their work to deliver stationery to the schools due to the situation or the conditions of our roads. So this is really frustrating. For the CSIR, the presenter was too fast. I couldn't get the names of the provinces where you conducted the workshop on how to repair potholes, so that when we go there for oversight, we'll have to know exactly which provinces were workshopped. So it would be better if I get that one. So with the Department of Transport, I think, yes, there is this sensitive issue of e-tolling. People doesn't want to pay this thing. But what we can say about those roads, it's like you are driving in heaven. They are beautiful roads. No any other provinces except for the big cities that have those roads. So as people from the rural areas, we don't have those. You buy your car today, it will last only for 3 months, then it's gone. And the way the budget, the allocation, the policies that we are still having, the apartheid one, I think there is a need to relook into those policies because they are not assisting in ensuring development in the rural area. So I think we need to relook into these policies. We need to make changes into these policies, especially those of allocating budgets. Because as far as I know, from where I'm sitting, budget is still allocated in terms of population. And those provinces with many people during the year, half of those people are going back home to the rural areas. That's why during the holidays we are having this high rate of accidents, because people are going back home. And accidents doesn't only happen in urban areas. They are happening also in rural areas. So I think we need this and the capacity within our municipality. And some of these issues that I want to talk about, the chairperson has already alluded to it, like the areas where there is no access at all at this point in time. There are areas where there's no road. For example, we visited that area of Lusikisiki. There are areas where people cannot access any clinic or any hospital because there's no room. So I think we need to do something on that one. And also, last night on my way back to Cape Town, I happened to sit next to a lady. She said she's from Beggarsport, Steelport, something like that, in a village called Stoking. They said that, she said, in that area, there's no room. They have RDP houses, they have electricity, there's no water, there's no rent. So they are unable to access transport, they have to walk long distances to the clinics and all that because of lack of roads. So the presenter from the department mentioned this traffic data in his presentation. I don't understand the traffic data we are talking about, or is it the 200 cars that cannot have a road here because we don't have 200 cars in this village, or what? I don't know. So I just want to understand this. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I'd just like to ask two questions for clarity there. Virtually definitional on the CSR presentation as presented by Dr. Paige Green. I must say I really enjoyed that. It's lovely to see someone working in a position like himself with such passion for his subject, such enthusiasm for his NGO trying to, well, state-supported organization, obviously, but what they're trying to achieve. The two questions are, at the end we're told that we can't seal every one of these 500,000 kilometers of roads in South Africa. I'm just trying to understand what is meant in this presentation by the word seal. Because you can have the N3 in many places of concrete type construction. You can have provincial roads, which is maybe up to 4 or 5 bases and then a asphalt top, and then as you work your way downwards, chip and spray formula, which I'm quite familiar with, which can then be sealed with a slurry seal, right down to what I think you call the thin skin or something road, and then just stabilized surface and then nothing. So where does the definition of sealing begin and end? Is it anything that's stabilized upwards, or is it just the chip and spray or the bitumen or whatever it is? I just need to know what is meant by steel so I understand where the argument is in that. And then the second question comes from my own mind. When we heard the presentation about the bitumen alternative, within that slide there was a example and a few photographs of a sand seal before the rains and then afterwards. Presumably the impact of the passenger vehicles and maybe heavier vehicles line the sand into the areas which are slightly lower in depth. But did you mean that to be bitumen? Because I've always understood bitumen to be something different, a petroleum-based product. Now I'm a little bit confused about why that's included in the bitumen position. So you just clarify those two points. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the first one, Chair, I've mixed up my notes. It's just I accept the apology of the two officials that were not here. I was very critical for them to be back at this meeting, referring to the department. Because this is very, very important, especially when we've got such presentations to the committee and also to the department itself. My second thing, issue with the chapter thing, we are talking about your strategy for upgrading railroad. Now, in your presentation, where there is a discourse for me or discomfort is when you make an example. You take Soweto. I'm not sure whether Soweto is classified as rural. And why do we have to take it? I need to be convinced on that one. Because I would have thought that you've made an example of a rural area to fix the problem that we're having. Not talk of apples, outcomes oranges. So compare apples with apples. Because Soweto to me is an urban, even more than an urban. So I need it, and also that type of a road, I still need to be convinced. It was not really as bad as you think, in the manner in which you raised. So please, make me comfortable to not have some other thoughts about what you presented to me. The other issue, Chairperson, so the pictures here of Soweto, I'm not very comfortable. I would want to see rural, because you say, yes, rural cover roads. Let's go to that. To the heart of the problem, and not just the other issue on your map here. This one is Mary Atlan. You know, I'm not sure what it's called. I used to do geography some time ago. The red Atlan is the blue one, and so on. But as a student, you must wear or obey. But normally when people find Atlas, the National Road, Secondary Road, it must tell me, your guys here must give me a clear immediately to see this is what you mean in terms of the picture. Does not come very strong in terms of your guide, so that as a learner, I must see, all right, if it's red, if it's now both your lines are red, then that does not give me a clear picture. That's what are you referring to when you talk about the status quo of the road. And sometimes you say 1 to so many kilometers, it's not there. I would like to be guided very clearly. Well, if I had to explain this, I would be very shocked of that kind of information. I appreciate on the substantive matter when you want to re-fence some funds to address the road. But I think that funding is very little. I understand that you do have the entirety of the gravel road of South Africa. And the breakdown problems like all that research and audits. But surely we need to have some strong recommendations as to how to move with speed so that we measure you in your performance on what you have picked up based on that research and what needs to be done. It does not come very strong. And with time frames thereof. Because it's one thing to say, look what this, but how do you fix it? Step by step, or problem by problem, so that we know where are we, so that we don't go back to and fro on the matter. I am not getting a sense that there's an integrated approach between the three spheres of government in addressing this matter, because we're addressing only this year, you know. I think that we need to look into this matter at another level. don't want to bring my political party issues, but really, I think this is food for thought to go to the heart of the matter. How do we change the situation of South Africa with speed going forward? Remember, we were part of the MPG. It is expected that a fundamental shift and movement or improvement should have been done. But in the manner of which this presentation is saying, that not is directly really, and looking, seeing seriously that we are going to address the issue of the MPGs, especially in goal number, what, transport. So I'm saying that I do have that little bit of concern. In fact, it's a major concern. The document is not going up to that level. So that when you compare the subject countries in as far as that report is concerned, it tells us as South Africa, the Department of Transport is assisting government in moving towards that direction. So, Chair, I think we need to be a little bit robust on this matter. Look, one president, I'm not sure which one, you speak of the 27 departments before a total is implemented, almost 18 months. We need to be told, if our bureaucracy is taking 36 steps in address to implement a project, where should we cut? So that we shorten the project. It can be. You vote out a budget now, it will only be implemented in 2014. And what happens in between? Consultancy, developing process policies and so on. And yet there was money that was earmarked for a particular project. So the Department of Transport must come up with tangible things that will make our communities happy. Otherwise, it's a vicious recurring cycle that takes us back, not going forward. My last point is a concern. The skilling of our people, they are not very highly skilled. We left the system and come back to a process of consultants. And also sometimes and ask exorbitant funds because of their skills. And it seems to me we are moving a little bit very slow in addressing the matter of skills in as far as this arm that is required to improve our lives. Look, I'm just looking at Transtile. I understand normal travel is speaking of the city. Transtile is 29 towns, right? Towns. And each town is surrounded by more than 100 villages. That's why if you talk Eastern Cape and you talk of the population and the ruralness, it's in those areas. 6.7 population. And the better part of that area, 70%, is rural. Now, do we make a shift? Is there a way of measuring that? We have made some inputs to that, KZN, equal to, and so that there's a systematic way of the department to deal with roads, so that this thing of our kids or learners are unable to get books. There is a forward movement in improving that infrastructure. I don't get that sense of we are not very systematic. Let alone to talk to one another as a full service department. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable.
Thank you, Chairperson. The CSIR presentation was excellent. Thank you very much. I thought that gave us wonderful insight of what can be achieved with non-conventional methods. I think that great. The one from the African Access Holdings is clearly pointed to examples of the problem, which is useful too. The one by the department is the one that shocks me completely. I'm shocked by the state of the roads, the rural roads, and I'm shocked by the poor quality of the presentation. I agree with the Honourable Suka that page 5, I mean, what on earth is that? Your key in the top left hand corner, the colours are not even the same as on the map. You have National Road in brown, on the map they're in blue. You shifted them out of their position, so they don't even come, and I don't even know what that sign is, but it just tells us nothing as a committee. This, page 6, I mean, Chairperson, I don't know whether you realize, but there are huge factual errors in the content here. Page 6, they tell us we have 9 metros. Now that, first of all, shocked me that the Department of Transport seemed to think we have 9 metros. Do we have 9 metros? Then you turn over the page, No, no, the previous line says 9 provinces. That line says 9 metros, and it's repeated on page 7. I thought that was bad enough. Then I turned over a couple of pages to look at where these 9 metros are. Page 10 tells you. He's twice on page 10 got Mogale City as a metro. I mean, which government in this country decided on Mogale City as a metro? And you look at that list of metros, I mean, it's just shocking. The data, it leaves you with question marks about the data. I mean, is the data sound if we don't even know what the metros in the country are? Then if you look at the deterioration, that actually shows you how the state of the rural roads and or the gravel roads is just getting worse and worse and worse. I mean, if you go back to 1999, the red, I'm on page 9, the red section is small. So in 99, we've had a small problem with gravel roads. Now in 2008, I mean, according to this chart, we now have a crisis. So either this government has completely failed to invest in rural roads, or this chart is completely wrong. The data in 1999 was completely incorrect. This thing is enough to give one a headache, really. The state of the roads and the quality of this presentation, Chairperson, is just not acceptable. I just want to see if I can find something else in this presentation. I agree with Honourable Suka as well. Soweto, this project, Chairperson, was undertaken, to my knowledge, by the City of Johannesburg. I was a city councillor at the time in the City of Johannesburg, and I sat on the Transportation Committee of the City of Johannesburg, and I think there was a vehement from Treasury to help pay for the road. But apart from the cash to help pay for the road, this project was not undertaken by the Transport Department. This project was undertaken by the City of Johannesburg. So why is it even in the presentation? It's not an example of the Transport Department. Apart from cash, you sent, there was billion rand tranches that were sent, I think once a year or once every 2 years, to pay for this project. And we were told at the time it was a different number of kilometers than we were told it was either 326 or 328 kilometers when I was a city councillor there. You've got it, yes, 314 kilometers. Well, I won't fight about that. It's not a major matter. But still, I mean, it's not a project of the Transport Department. We want to know, what have you as the Transport Department done in the maintenance of rural roads per year? And Honourable Suk is again correct. What's the total amount of the problem? Because if we're going to go to the Transport Department or to Treasury and say you haven't allocated enough budget for the roads, we've got to know how big the problem is. South Africa needs to know how big the problem is. Is it 4,000 kilometres of roads that have deteriorated to the point at which they have to be rebuilt? If that's the case, how much does that cost? And the CSIR have given certain alternatives. Well, if we use alternative one, building complete new tar roads, it's going to cost X. If we use the CSIR method, it's going to cost Y. And if we just grade them and upgrade them as gravel roads, it's going to cost Z. That total project will cost X. And you come to us and say you need a budget to do that, and the budget is in your recommendation, needs to be the following. If that has been done, of course, then I have to blame the politicians who have not given you the money. If that hasn't been done, well, can please do it. So that at this level, we know how big the problem really is and what's going to take to fix it. But I mean, really, Chairperson, I wouldn't accept this presentation if I were you. I would say it's just not good enough. Thank you.
Thank you.
Much as we are having, as the committee, terrible headaches about this, I am worried about the purpose of this committee. How much? Because since I joined this committee, we sang the pothole song ever since I joined this committee. We have this song of the pothole. What we see from your slide is what we saw when we visited this place. Really, really, it's a disaster. When you are a teacher teaching students, you are expecting them to pass at the end of the year. I don't know whether our principal is failing us or you failing us. We are failing the community. We are representing the community here. When we see the accident in the road, we just keep quiet. We don't even want to say you are a member of parliament, more especially if those people doesn't know you. Because all their fingers are pointing at us. What is the problem? Where can we assist? Or what do you want us to do? We are finishing another term now. In 2014, we'll be singing the same song. I'm telling you. Nothing is happening. So I just wanted to say that to the person. Otherwise, it's really painful. It's hurting. I don't know what is your problem as a person or as a member of this committee. Every time, I used to say to Chairperson, I'm sure transport is in your veins. You can't even sleep. You are dreaming of this transport. You are dreaming of this pothole. But you are doing nothing. She can get mad, I'm telling you. When you are leading people, you don't expect such things. Otherwise, you are failing her committee now and ourselves. Thank you.
Thanks, everything. I guess the state of the presentation from the Department of Transport is not necessarily indicative of the state of our roads. I think they have got to be separated. However, my questions, I think I'll have to start at the beginning. With transport, page one, where you are talking of labor productive methodology. My question to you would be a very simple one. To check with you, how are you going to make sure that focus is actually increased on labor absorptive methodologies? Because as we would know, that is the position of the current government, that whenever there is a development taking place, the community around that place must be taken into confidence with further development by benefiting directly from such a development taking place. And then question number two would be to touch base with you and check as to what challenges have you encountered in scenarios where you have been utilizing labor-intensive orientated road constructive companies. I would like to know what challenges have arisen and what are those challenges. And then on page I think bullet number five. Can you unpack that bullet for me? You see, I'm a layman, so oftentimes I get lost. Page four, bullet number five. And then on condition gravel provincial summary, I see that Free State is not captured yet. What might be the reason to this? Because originally, I'm a rural boy, like other members here. And originally, I come from the Free State, even though I came here with the housing ticket. So I still have soft spot for Free State. So I'd like to know why my province is not covered yet. On CSIR, I must echo the sentiments of my colleagues Indeed, it was quite enlightening. Your presentation was indeed quite enlightening, but my only question would be on page 6, on bullet number 4, general perception of little confidence in most of these products. I would want to hear from you as to what can you attribute this reluctance to. In terms of the last presentation, it was quite eye-opening and also emphasis at the same time. Emphasis in the sense that it was indicative of the challenges that we are having on our roads, and here are operators who operate on a daily basis were able to say these are the challenges that we experience. And I would like to pose at that chair. Thank you.
Thank you. We are pressed with time. There is a meeting scheduled for this venue that starts at 1 o'clock. So we have very limited time for the department to respond to our questions. I think that we should have a follow-up meeting. Maybe as good African access, but yes, I have back and the department. I am saying that the department was asked to come and present to us a strategy for upgrading of rural cargo ports. In this document, there is no strategy. What is in this document is the outline of the problem from the department. Also, what comes out in the presentation is that even when you are presenting the problem, you are not presenting it adequately. Starting from the map, yes. And also, some of the issues that have been raised by my colleagues. The second issue that indicates to us that there is no strategy, or the department doesn't understand what we mean when we say come and present to us a strategy. Is that you are on page 12. Key issues raised are not raised by the department. They are the perspective by the African Development Bank, not the department. The department has not presented its own perspective. On page 14, the department is presenting to us provincial programs. If a country wants to visit South Africa to come and learn from South Africa, how we are responding to rural gravel road. We don't have a model for the country. We have my father used to buy a seed called land and wheat. In this page 14, it's land and wheat. Because if each province is doing its own thing, so we don't have a strategy for the country. Also, the example gravel roads in rural areas, the presentation are made gravel roads in the township. If we wanted Crown and Road Township, we would have said so. You know the difference between the rural area and the township. Lastly, to me, it doesn't reflect that the department takes us seriously. When we raise questions and when we raise, we invite the department to come and make a presentation. Questions asked in the National Assembly are very, very important for the department to actually wake up. And also the statements that are made by the minister are not reflected in the program that is implemented by the department. Issues raised by the president in the State of the Nation address are not reflected in the program of the department. So I don't even think that we can waste time today and ask the department to respond to any of the issues that we have raised. We need to call the department to come back and just start on this one and allow the department to respond to us, and we will also tell the department what we see as a problem that is not moving the country forward. And we would want to thank CSIR because answers to what is being presented by the department lie in the CSIR presentation. It's a government institution, but the department doesn't want to utilize. So, also in terms of policies, when we ask questions, we are then given part of the policy that justifies the laziness in the department. We can't do the roads because the policy says you need to have 200 cars. And then CSIR is able to uplift all that is formulates the policy. And to me, that means the department finds excuses for not doing things. And lastly, we would want the department, senior management in the department, the accounting office, the DDG, accompanied by the DDG responsible for road infrastructure development, not any person junior than And when we say we need information about the network, we want to know the real network. How many schools are inaccessible because of bad roads? How many hospitals and clinics are inaccessible? And what is the plan of the department? I think from where I sit, we can only get justice into this if we defer. Note all the questions, call the department to come back and be engaged in all the questions in the presence of the CSIR. Honorable.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. When you come back, I hope I got my entry back through in Kunduzi, because at the moment it's going from Richard's Bay. But I wondered, I do agree with you, I wonder if we couldn't just get answers from CSIR, though. Because everybody really appreciated their presentation, and there's a couple of questions I think I can answer quite rapidly. And then I think you're totally right. I think the Department of Transport must come back and do a proper presentation with proper facts and proper maps and actually answer the question. So can we just get the answers from CSIR, please?
Okay.
Answers
relating to what we meant by this road.
Quick questions about the sealant and then the bullet form. That was the main one that were asked.
And portal workshops. Actually, respond quickly, ladies, because we were there. The portal workshops. We did 8 workshops, 2 in Western Cape, 2 in Eastern Cape, 1 in Mpumalanga, 1 KZN, 1 Gauteng. Northwest, Popo, Free State, and Northern Cape. We advertised that there wasn't enough response to hold them. We had to cancel them because we only got 2 or 3 people from most of them. We also did for Joburg Road Agency, Chwani Municipality, KZN Roads and Public Works. We did 650 people, Public Works. Okay, in regard to the seal, what I'm using the World Bank definition. An unsealed road is gravel or earth. A sealed road is bituminous or concrete. We've got less than 5% concrete in South Africa, so basically bituminous. And a sand seal would be a sealed road. It is bitumen with sand on top.
Yes.
Get it back in. The last question was to put away. Regarding the chemicals, the perception of no confidence is really a result of bad marketing, literally hit and run, by non-technical salespeople. People find these products on the internet, think they can get rich overnight, and try and sell them. A lot of people sell them for a lot of money, dump them and run without any follow-up or supervision during construction, and that's really what brought the market down. There's also a lot of infighting amongst the suppliers as well, which is a problem.
Okay. I take note of all the issues raised. I just want to respond to the one slide and the question about the Soweto slide, right? Now, I put the slide there for a reason, because the message I'm trying to say here is that if you want something to happen, right, you've got to have the decision taken and the support taken at a political level. Now, Soweto, we agree, but it's not in the category of rural area, it's a residential area. But it was a political decision that we will surface those gravel roads. Right? The decision was taken, the funding was found, and the project was implemented. So that was the purpose of that slide, Jacob.
Do you need to also see the present when Department of Transport comes? Okay, thank you.
Can I explain why? The department is still there. Trying to find a problem every time. Then I ask.